Hello and welcome into this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. I'm your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I hope you had a good weekend. It was a long weekend around podcast world, but for more than one reason. Took Friday, had many other things to get accomplished, had an outside session Friday morning. And I got to tell you, that one's going to air in about 2 weeks. And it was a really fun podcast to do with somebody you actually may have seen on television. He and his daughter have appeared on America's Got Talent, and they've been on Britain's Got Talent, The Champions. They're both Guinness World Record holders for crazy stunts that they've done. And his name is Bello Nock. His daughter is Annalise, and we spent some time chatting with Bello on Friday, and that will come out a week from tomorrow. 1 week from tomorrow at about 7 p.m. And I'll try to remember to tell you more about that. But Bello's a great guy. My wife and I are talking about going down to visit with Bello and Jennifer and stay at their place called the Funny Farm. Bello was with Ringling Brothers, and his family has a long history with Ringling Brothers. His parents traveled with Ringling Brothers for quite some time, and when Ringling Brothers basically dissolved, when the circus dissolved, he bought the train car that his parents lived in while they were on the road with Ringling Brothers. It's on his property. His property is called the Funny Farm. It's a training center outside of Sarasota, Florida, and he invited us to come down and stay in the train car. So we may go do that. That should be fun. So much for name dropping. It has been an insane weekend. Over the weekend, the news media coronated Joe Biden. The election has not been concluded yet. The count is not finished yet. The challenges have not been addressed yet. Nothing is done. Even if the vote was not under suspicion, it would be the middle of December. What is it, 12th or the 14th? I'm getting the dates mixed up. When the Electoral College vote is cast. So we've got a ways to go before this is over. The fat lady ain't sung yet, but the Biden campaign trotted old Creaky Joe out to accept the nomination, or accept his position, the win. He actually delivered an acceptance speech. He hasn't won the election, and he's accepted winning the election. And if you're questioning why would the press go ahead and call the election when there's so much in question? And we'll talk about what's in question to a degree. There's so much talk about this. I don't know how much I can do to shed any kind of light on things, but I'll try to. The news media coronated him, as I said. Why would they do that? And why would the Democrat Party trot him out to accept things? Why would Kamala Harris, on her Twitter profile, list herself as the vice president elect when she is not? At least not yet. Why would they jump the gun for over a month already? It's a month. Why would they do that? I will tell you why. It's called psychological warfare. Oh, Mark, you're getting into conspiracy theory stuff. No. This is an accurate term for what's actually going on. This is something that progressives do every time they're involved in the political realm. They declare things that are not, as though they are. They talk about winning elections when they haven't won elections. And when they take it to the extreme that they have, being coronated by the progressive press and trotting their candidates out to accept what they have not won, then everybody who gets their information from what Rush Limbaugh calls the drive-by media, these low information people who just believe what they're told will all believe that Joe Biden is the next president of the United States. And when the legal challenges actually result in him not being the president of the United States, then they will go nuts. Then they will go crazy. They're already talking about, remember, do you remember in the run-up, they kept asking Trump, will you peacefully allow the peaceful transition of power? Will you go quietly when you lose? Do you remember all of that? Do you think that was just people speculating? No, it was not. It was people planning. They had plans. They knew what they were going to do. They knew in advance how much groundwork they had laid over the last 4 years. In 2016, the Hillary campaign didn't do enough. The Trump campaign spotted their weakness and exploited it by campaigning hard in the upper Midwest and in Pennsylvania. And that hard campaigning resulted in a win. And the Democrats said, wow, we found our hole. That's where the leak came in. That's what sunk our ship. Let's go fix that. And they fixed it. And the word fix is a very appropriate term. And so now they're telling everybody this is a done deal. It's not a done deal. Back in the year 2000, the Democrats did the same thing with Al Gore. The very same thing. He drug us through 37 days of counting chads and recounting ballots, and it was finally put to a stop, not by the Supreme Court, but the campaign for Al Gore did. And I'll talk about that later. I'm getting ahead of myself. Do I have time for this? Let's try. Let's look at why we're seeing this happen right now. I posted this to social media over the weekend. It got a little bit of response, but I want to share it here. In 2016, against all the odds, against every poll and political prediction, Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton and became our 45th president of the United States. On election night, every newscast was buzzing about the historic event about to occur. America's first woman president. Donald Trump had no chance of winning. But he did. Since then, the left has been trying to destroy the man who defeated their candidate. You know what's happened. It's been a nonstop parade of lies and deception, horrible accusations, political games, all designed to convince the American people that they had chosen poorly, that the wrong person was elected president, all to convince them to vote for someone else in 2020. Looking back at 2016 now, it's easy to see what the Democrats were planning to do. They had just seen 8 years of America's first black president, a historic happening, which they realized was the key to electing their next president of their choosing, a minority candidate. The Democrats played the race card to elect Obama. Those who objected to Obama for any reason whatsoever were labeled as racists. It didn't matter that he was a radical leftist whose political career started in the living room of the leader of a domestic terror group. It didn't matter that very little was actually known about him, that nobody who went to college with him could place him there, or that what was known about him was troubling. If any of this was brought up, it was attributed to racism. Obama was a double positive for the Democrats, a black man and a history-making candidate. During his two terms, Obama laid the groundwork for what he called during his campaign,
change will
the
not come
fundamental,
if we wait for some other
transforming
person.
The United States of America.
Yeah, that's the one. A transition away from a constitutional republic to a socialist democracy. His supporters even wanted him to move faster, but he told them he wasn't a king and was restricted by the Constitution until he was elected to his second term and didn't need to be concerned about re-election and could do whatever was necessary to begin his
fundamentally transforming the United States of America,
which he did. When it came time to elect the next president, the Democrats knew what had to be done. They had to run another candidate who was protected by their status as a minority. But not a racial minority. It had to be a candidate with a different intersectional power. It had to be a woman. America's first female president. Anyone who objected would be accused of misogyny. And they were. The Democrats knew they had the perfect candidate in Hillary Clinton, and that she wanted to be president so badly that she would do whatever she was required to do for them. She would continue what they had started with Barack Obama and push the fundamental transformation even further, hopefully to complete socialism. And this is why we are where we are today. The Democrats lost their opportunity to continue their transformation and poured all of their energy into destroying the person responsible, the political outsider who stepped in their way. Their ultimate goal was to prevent his reelection and resume their plan with another pliable candidate who desperately wanted to be president and would do their bidding. That candidate would be Joe Biden. But Joe Biden is old. He's frail. His mental capacity is clearly diminished. He can't really function as a real president. So they partner Joe Biden with someone who also desperately wants to be president and will do whatever they're told, and who just happens to have even stronger intersectional credit than the first black or female presidential candidate, the first black female to potentially hold the office of president, Kamala Harris. Any objections to her will be misogyny and racism. The Democrats want power and control again. They want to continue their political plans. Their desire is so intense that they will break state and federal campaign laws to achieve their goal. And they just did. And this is why we are where we are right now. The Democrats saw success on the horizon until Donald Trump came along and screwed everything up for them. And now they're trying to program the brains of every person in America who believes the mainstream press that Joe Biden is now the president-elect, when he is not. As I said, the fat lady has yet to take the stage. She's not even warming up backstage. There is still a long way to go. And should Donald Trump's legal process fail and Joe Biden is placed in the Oval Office, in about 6 months, he'll be gone. And Kamala Harris will be there. And the Democrats will pick up where they left off. Joe Biden has already promised to write a slew of executive orders to reverse everything that Donald Trump has done. And please remember that what Donald Trump has done is to turn the economy around, is to employ more people. And not just white folks, he's employing minorities at much higher numbers because of what he's done. He has removed us from the status of being the victim in the world and being blamed for all the problems, and restored respect. And nations around the world actually have respected us because we've had a strong leader who doesn't play pussyfooting political games. And Joe Biden will change all of that and reduce us in status around the world once again. And more people will be out of work. And oh yeah, get used to wearing a mask. He'll mandate that. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Monday. Wow. I'm multitasking. That's never good for me. Monday, the 9th day of November, 2020. I hope you had a great weekend in spite of everything, because as I encourage you each week on a Friday, and I didn't get a chance to this time, I encourage you to unplug, to just step away. And you may be thinking, well, there's so much going on. Well, yeah, but trust me, not much is going to change over a weekend. Now, today, today, lawsuits will be filed, and lots of stuff is going to change. Well, some things will change. There will be news. Things that, hang on here. Well, how about that? Isn't that nice? I'm getting all kinds of little things. See, I told you I was multitasking. I told you I was multitasking, and I'm what I'm multitasking at is trying to get logged back into Parler, somewhere along the line, the password I had for Parler wasn't getting me in, and I was just during the break going through the password reset thing, and one of the things that just happened was they sent me a text with a code that I had to put into to actually prove, oh yeah, I'm a human being. So there are some who would disagree, but I am a human being anyway. So now I'm back into Parler again. So all right, that's done, because there's stuff I got to get done. I've been trying to get verified on Parler for a while, and every time I've put in the information they request, it kicks it back out again. Like, that's not me. I'm just trying to work that out. Anyway, where were we? Oh, yeah. A lot to cover, but over the weekend, you should have just unplugged and then re-engaged today. Because if you're not a news junkie, you really need to unplug. And I am a news junkie. Well, actually, if you are a news junkie, you probably should unplug. And maybe I should have unplugged over the weekend. But I got to be honest with you, I'm a lot like you. I was angry. I was just so angry. So angry. Because it's obvious what's happening here. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a brain surgeon. Can I use all of them? You just have to open your eyes and see what's going on and think back to what we've been told for 4 years, especially over the past year. And you start drawing lines and connecting things and realizing, oh, they've been planning this forever. And now it's happening. And if you look back at history, you realize the Democrats have been cheating in elections for probably longer than you've been alive. If you were alive back in the 60s, then you might remember people talking about how fishy John F. Kennedy's election was. This same sort of thing was happening back then. Back in the 50s, Lyndon Johnson's very first state senatorial run was overshadowed by vote fraud. The Democrats have been doing this for a long time. And every time reasonable, rational people say, shouldn't the vote be protected by having to provide some form of identification? They say, you are depriving certain people of the vote who don't have ID, who can't get ID. And the incidence of that is so minor, it's ridiculous. But the accusation is enough to back people off. It's kind of like being called a racist or a misogynist. Oh, well, nobody wants that, so you tread lightly. Well, being told that you are disenfranchising voters is a lie. Nobody's trying to disenfranchise anybody. They're just saying, it's the security of the election. We're the only nation on earth who doesn't require ID to vote. Why is that? The Democrats have people cringing in corners. That's why. Well, as for taking the weekend off, nothing has changed since Friday night. Over at the Federalist, we have some perspective on what happened over the weekend from Christopher Bedford. He says, you might find that strange that nothing's changed since Friday night, given the media stampede to certify the election results for their man, but it's crucial. The calls made Saturday morning are as arbitrary as they were last Tuesday. Could just as easily have waited for Monday. and fly in the face of massive evidence of voter irregularities that at minimum should be heard in court before anyone considers calling the election. Add pending lawsuits and official recounts in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And the conclusion is an attempt by the American media to pick our president and decide our election. The danger comes now when, in concert with Silicon Valley censors, they use their own decree to dismiss and silence anyone who says otherwise. For large swaths of the corporate media, the work to elect a Democratic president never ended. From before he even took office, attempts to delegitimize President Donald Trump's administration employed tools ranging from innuendo to foreign disinformation, and from partisan conspiracies to laughably labeled anonymous senior officials. They did not stop Tuesday, holding calls on Republican wins like Florida for hours and North Carolina for days, while recklessly rushing calls on states like Arizona for Team Blue. Since Election Day itself, the irregularities have piled up. There were quick and continuing examples of Democratic Pennsylvania cities illegally barring Republican poll watchers from watching polls from even as far as 6 feet away. There are multiple allegations of the long dead voting in 2020. And on Friday, evidence was released that vote counting software Dominion Voting Systems switched thousands of votes from Trump to former VP Joe Biden in just one county. While this software was rejected 3 times by the Texas Election Board for noticeable security with vulnerabilities, it was used across Georgia and Michigan, 2 of the states subject to Republican lawsuits, and in Georgia, a recount. None of this is proof of that the Democrats didn't win the election, even if it strongly suggests illegal and undemocratic activity in states across the union. But it is a naked corporate attempt to exert control over what's happening in the United States. If just one thing, remember this: corporations don't get to pick our president, and they don't decide our elections. Donald Trump's entire presidency is an effort, an affront to the media. His victory was an assertion that they're not in charge. We are. That's why they hate him. That's why they have to destroy him. And that's what this power grab is about. It isn't an election result. It is media elites reminding people who's really in charge and who gets to make the rules. Nothing has changed since America went to bed Friday evening. There's a fight coming. After over a century of rule, the corruption of the big city Democratic machines will finally be examined in court. Every day the media is going to call you crazy for demanding it. Buckle up. Absolutely true. Every word of it. I highlighted part of this as I went by. Democratic Pennsylvania cities illegally barring Republican poll watchers from watching polls from even as far as 6 feet away. Today, we actually have the testimony of more than one poll watcher who saw what was actually happening, who testifies that they watched as the Democrats doing the validation of the ballots stopped work whenever Republicans were nearby. Some who said they did some calculation. They looked at how many ballots were actually being processed while they were near and keeping an eye on things, and saw that in Pennsylvania, it looked like they were doing about 7,000 ballots an hour. But later, after Republican poll watchers were escorted from the place and onlookers cheered and there were fewer and fewer witnesses to see what was going on, that level of approval skyrocketed. There was a lot of fishy business happening in Pennsylvania, in Detroit, and in other places. There have been a lot of distractions, too, over the weekend. Hopefully you were wise enough to spot them. There's some serious stuff happening. And today, hopefully, we'll hear some more and some light will be shed. And things will become clearer for those of us who honestly do care about the good of our nation. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Monday, November 9, 2020. Oh, yeah. The president had a statement. Let me read you what he had to say. We all know why Joe Biden is rushing to falsely pose as the winner and why his media allies are trying so hard to help him. They don't want the truth to be exposed. The simple fact is this election is far from over. Joe Biden has not been certified as the winner of any states, let alone any of the highly contested states headed for mandatory recounts or states where our campaign has valid and legitimate legal challenges that could determine the ultimate victor. In Pennsylvania, for example, our legal observers were not permitted meaningful access to watch the counting process. Legal votes decide who's president, not the news media. Beginning Monday, our campaign will start prosecuting our case in court to ensure election laws are fully upheld and the rightful winner is seated. The American people are entitled to an honest election. That means counting all legal ballots and not counting any illegal ballots. This is the only way to ensure the public has full confidence in our election. It remains shocking that the Biden campaign refuses to agree with this basic principle and wants ballots counted even if they are fraudulent, manufactured, or cast by ineligible or deceased voters. Only a party engaged in wrongdoing would unlawfully keep observers out of the count room and then fight in court to block their access. So what is Biden hiding? I will not rest until the American people have the honest vote count they deserve and that democracy demands. And that comes from President Donald J. Trump. That was his statement issued on the election over the weekend. I got to tell you, we're watching before our very eyes the progressive method of winning elections. And that is to lie as much as possible before the election, to cheat as much as possible during the election, and then to lie as much as possible after the election. And that's what's going on right now. The president of the Heritage Foundation has made a statement as well. This was, when was this? This was Saturday. He says, the American people deserve and demand election results they can trust. When the litigation in the critical battleground states has been settled and all allegations of fraud and irregularities have been investigated, that's what they will have. Unfortunately, we are not there yet. Recounts and pending litigation must be resolved to the satisfaction of the political parties and the Americans who support them and voted for them. Election integrity is a pillar of our republic, and without it, we won't last. For the sake of this election and all the subsequent elections in generations to come, we must come to a legitimate conclusion. Anyone rushing to the finish, including the media and those with a vested interest in one outcome, are doing a disservice to the country. Like Vice President Biden has said, democracy sometimes requires a little patience. Wow. And that is from Heritage Foundation President K.C. James. She made that statement over the weekend. And it's a good thing. I think she said good stuff there. I mean, we need to be patient, and we also need to not accept what we're being told in the news or on social media. Well, social media. Over the weekend, a lot of people decided to make a change in social media. A lot of people went to Parler. That's what I was referring to a little while ago, actually, was just I'm trying to get back up. I have a personal Parler account and I have a show Parler account, and I was trying to get into the show Parler account and everything is kind of squirrely there, and I'm trying to get everything verified, so I've got the little badge that says, yeah, I'm a real human being and not a robot, and that sort of a thing. And I've been having a little issue with that, but I'm working on that. But a lot of people over the weekend established Parler accounts. Because honestly, they're sick of the censorship. And there is censorship going on Facebook and Twitter. It's rampant. It's widespread. And they're getting away with it because they can. And people like Jack, oh God, I can see his face, Goat Boy. I can't, his last name just escapes me. Anyway, Jack over at Twitter, people are screaming right now. Hey, it's not helping me. I can't hear you. He knows that he can sit in front of Congress, that they can read him the riot act, that they can posture and they can rant and they can rave, but they're not going to do anything to him. So he goes in and sits for as long as it takes to let them vent their spleens. And then he goes back to business as usual, doing exactly what he was doing before. The same thing happens with Zuckerberg over at Facebook. He knows they're not doing anything. He knows his people, widespread throughout the company, are progressives. And he knows that what's happening is, actually on both platforms, is that uninformed people who are getting their news from the mainstream press, which is lying to them for political reasons, those people are reporting people for just having a different opinion. And those people who don't agree with the progressive opinion get locked down until somebody can examine it. And sometimes, if that person has enough followers, they know that it is a key time right now. As soon as they make their statement, and their statement is probably 100% true and it's damaging to progressives, they know that if they report it and get it shot down, that far fewer people will see it. The same thing happens over at YouTube. At YouTube, people who monetize their channels, people who depend on that, they make a living from their videos, and people who are trying to get the word out with correct information, with truthful information, they know that they get their most impressions as soon as their video drops. On the cash side, people who are making money through advertisers know that in the first, I think I read it's like the first 20 minutes after your video drops, that's when most people are going to look at it. They're going to get their ad revenue checkoffs, and that's when they're going to make their money. It's easily within the first day. But I think it's really tight, like the first 20 minutes. So if YouTube earmarks their video and hides it because one person complains about it, they don't make their money, or nearly as much of it. The same thing happens to truth tellers, people who are trying to get the word out on YouTube with their videos. They get the most attention right when the video drops. Within that first hour, their video drops. That notification, you know, they all tell you, subscribe and click the notification bell. Well, if you get a notification and you follow it and the video is not there, then you don't see what they have to say. And that diminishes the impact of the video when there are thousands, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of followers. And it all happens because a single progressive weenie says, nope, don't like that. And they're reporting somebody that they disagree with. And many times it's orchestrated. And that's something you need to be aware of. They are watching carefully and preventing people from making the impact they need to make. They're fighting against the information process. They don't want the truth to be told because the truth disagrees with what they believe. That's kind of akin to people objecting to scientific fact being taught because it goes against the grain of what they believe to be true, which happens every day, by the way. Just open your eyes and look around. And that's what we're seeing happen. Oh my. But that's why the whole thing about Parler comes up, is that the social media giants are not allowing people their First Amendment rights. They are private businesses. They can they're operating in a rather nebulous loophole territory, but you don't have First Amendment rights. Let's say you go to, Walmart. You go into Walmart, you grab one of those plastic filing crates or something off the shelf, throw it on the floor, get up on it, start screaming at people. You get up, you make yourself a little platform and you start screaming at people about something you're passionate about. Guess what's going to happen? People in blue vests are going to come. They're going to ask you to stop. And after a minute or two of you not stopping, then people with blue vests are going to come along with people wearing badges, and they're going to make you stop. But you have the First Amendment right to express your views, right? Not necessarily on private property, you don't. And if they don't want you causing a problem, disrupting their shopping atmosphere, it doesn't matter what you're screaming about. They're going to shut you down because you're making people uncomfortable. And in that atmosphere, comfortable people spend more money. Uncomfortable people leave. So no, you don't have the right to scream what you believe in the middle of Walmart. See what I mean? And that's how it is with Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. They are private businesses. When you're on their essentially private property on their sites, then they have user agreements you have to agree to, and part of those user agreements give them the right to do what they wish in certain ways. I know there's some nebulous gray areas about whether or not they're a publisher or a platform, and how they're behaving as one or the other. But this is what's happening here. So if you get shut down, the way they look at it, they can shut you down because they don't want you causing disruptions and running people off. It's the same mentality. And so over the weekend, a lot of people said, well, I'm done with you. And I don't know how many people, but it was well over 1 million people just yesterday. Because Mark Levin, the great one, I like to call him the angry Yankee. Mark Levin said, I have a Parler account. I'm moving over there. I suggest you open a Parler account. Boom. I mean, boom. Parler was swamped. There were a couple of times late yesterday, I couldn't get on. I was trying to maintain my account and do some things. I couldn't get on because their servers were oversaturated. People were going nuts trying to get on, and they couldn't handle the traffic. That's a good problem to have. So if you haven't set up a Parler account, go ahead. I addressed this over the weekend as well about leaving Facebook and Twitter. I won't be leaving Facebook and Twitter anytime soon. I'm going to stay there. Because running from the problem is not curing the problem. More on that later. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. Pardon me while I take a little swig of my coffee. That's good stuff. Let's see here. Oh yeah, back to social media. I want to go back to social media, and before we wrap up, I want to share with you something that was posted over the last couple of days about how President Trump can still win, okay? All right, excuse me. All right, but first, over to this. I posted this on the Daily Perspective Podcast Facebook page over the weekend because I was seeing a lot of my friends on social media talking about quitting and going over to Parler, just cutting off Facebook and the like. And here's what I wrote in response to that. A lot of people are joining Parler, getting ready to walk away from Facebook and Twitter. The Daily Perspective has been on Parler for a while, not very active there because virtually all of the action is still on Facebook and Twitter. Will I move completely away from Twitter and Facebook? Not likely. It's important to me to know what's being spread around by the left. That's why I'm on the Democrat email list. I get multiple emails daily from the Democrat Disinformation Center. That's how I know what they're telling their minions. Knowing what lies are being spread is part of seeing the bigger picture, but only part of it. Still necessary, in my opinion. More important is knowing the truth. You won't find much truth on social media platforms. What will you find? Well, rumor, speculation, Democrat talking points and lies. Actually, they're the same thing. And other forms of unreliable information. That's why it's important to work harder and find accurate information and lean and learn what the truth looks and feels like so you can easily spot what's not true. My wife was once a bank teller. Part of her training included identifying counterfeit money. As you may imagine, it's very important for the people who handle our money to be able to know when they're handed phony bills. The way they learned to spot phony money was to learn every tiny detail of real money, not counterfeit money. Knowing the real thing intimately makes the counterfeit easy to recognize. You need to learn the truth in order to spot the lies. The more you know about how our nation is supposed to work and what our politicians are supposed to be doing and what's actually happening inside political circles as opposed to what the leftist press is publishing, the more easily you can discern between truth and lies. Is everything on Parler telling us the truth? No. There's plenty of the same found there as you'll find on Facebook and Twitter. The difference is Parler doesn't censor opinion, which dissents from the Democrat leftist narrative. That's an important difference. But walking away from Twitter and Facebook completely, in my opinion, isn't the answer. Isolation from what makes you uncomfortable is never the answer. That's fine if you're taking a break or going on vacation, but it's not a valid method for dealing with life. I'll be staying on Twitter and Facebook. I'll also be getting more active on Parler if I can find a multi-platform publishing option that isn't too cost prohibitive. And by the way, I haven't found one yet that includes Parler. That's the biggest challenge. As things are going now, it's very likely that some of my posts will be censored. So to see everything, you'll need to join Parler. Unless Facebook and Twitter shut my pages down, I'll still be posting on both of those platforms. And that's what I had to say about that. Go ahead and sign up, join Parler. But please, 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 remember that when you do so, you're not changing things. You're just stepping into a comfort zone. Just be aware of that. Now, over to what Trump can do. He can still win. Dick Morris is a political analyst, a former presidential advisor, political strategist. He's a regular contributor to Newsmax TV. And he wrote this. President Donald Trump can still win the presidency. Here's how. Only the Electoral College or the various state legislatures can declare a candidate the winner. To base this decision on network vote totals and projections and to call Biden the president-elect is irresponsible. The recounts in Arizona, Georgia, and other states are likely to go heavily for Trump. Most of the likely errors or invalid votes took place on mailed-in ballots. Machine votes are harder to tamper with. Since Biden won upwards of two-thirds of mail-in votes and absentee ballots, it's likely that most of the discarded mail ballots will be subtracted from Biden's total. The networks currently give Trump 214 electoral votes, voters 270 is the victory level. Alaska, where Trump has led by 2-1 all week and is now more than half counted, it will likely throw its three votes to Trump, giving him 217. Trump has likewise led in North Carolina, that's 15 votes all week, and his margin of 75,000 has not diminished. He will undoubtedly carry North Carolina. Like Alaska, the media will not call it for Trump to promote the illusion of a Biden victory. North Carolina would bring Trump's vote to 232. The vote count in Arizona shows Trump's deficit shrinking from 30,000 on Friday to 18,500 on Saturday, with about 100,000 left to count. After Arizona, that's 11 votes, is fully counted, it'll go through a recount subject to the pro-Trump bias identified in point two. Were he to win Arizona, he would have 243 votes. In Georgia, That's 16 votes. Biden leads by only 8,400 votes, a margin that's been dropping. Like Arizona, Trump may still win the count, and if not, would have a very good chance of prevailing in the count, in the recount. With Georgia, Trump would have 259 votes. Wisconsin, they have 10 votes. Wisconsin's tallied as having been won by Biden by 21,000 votes, but a re-canvass is in the offing. Given the facts enumerated earlier, there is a very good chance Trump will carry Wisconsin. The recount process in Wisconsin is uniquely fair and transparent, a model for the nation. So Trump may well flip the state. If he does, he will have 269 votes, one vote shy of victory. Then it comes down to Pennsylvania, and it's 20 votes. The Supreme Court provisionally allowed ballots to be counted if they arrived before Friday, November 6th, and were postmarked before Election Day, November 3rd, and ordered late votes to be segregated. When Justice Alito was informed that the state had not segregated the late votes as required in the court's decision, Alito reaffirmed the necessity of enforcing the court order. Joe Biden currently leads by 37,000 votes in Pennsylvania. The number of late arriving ballots likely far exceeds this total. The state has not published this information. Justice Alito and a court majority may throw out the late ballots, likely delivering the state to Trump. Additionally, for the reasons stated above, a re-canvass is likely to give Trump a decisive advantage. If he wins Pennsylvania, he would have 289 votes and a victory. Will there be a recount in Pennsylvania? The current law requires one if the margin's under 0.5%. And in Pennsylvania, it will likely be slightly greater. There are two ways to trigger a recount. First, the U.S. Supreme Court could order one after the vote counters so flagrantly violated Alito's order to segregate the votes that he had to reissue it. And remember, four justices wanted to reconsider whether to allow late ballots entirely. But the high court deadlocked 4-4. Now with Justice Barrett in the mix, it may take a different view, particularly if the presidency hangs in the balance. Second, Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution reads, "Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature therefore may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress." The Pennsylvania state legislature, solidly in Republican hands, that's both houses, by the way, may choose to demand a recount before appointing electors. To build the case for doing so, it may hold hearings into the allegations of fraud so as to help the voters of the state understand how flagrantly their votes were mishandled. Already, the leader of the state Senate in Pennsylvania and the speaker of the state assembly have held a press conference announcing their intention to audit the vote counting process. So as the great Yogi Berra said, it ain't over till the fat lady sings. She hasn't. And Dick Morris has got a pretty good grip on this. He is the kind of wonk who just enjoys every tiny detail of this kind of stuff. And the way he carves this path out makes perfect sense. It's very logical. It's very realistic. And I think it gives us hope. Because we've been watching something happening in America that should never happen. And it's happening because one political party has a lust for power and control at any cost. And this time, they may have gotten a little bit cocky. A little bit. They may have gotten very cocky. And as a result, they may have overplayed their hand. It's important to remember that back in 2000, the election that the leftists, the progressives still say was selected, not elected, when George Bush won, that this same sort of thing was happening in Florida, and the Gore campaign was searching for more Al Gore votes by petitioning for recounting Gore-friendly counties. They weren't looking at all the votes. They weren't looking for a full recount. They weren't looking to find out the actual outcome of the election. They were targeting certain counties. And the Supreme Court reminded them of Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution. And Florida was solidly in Republican hands. And the Democrat Party and the Al Gore campaign knew that if it came to that, they would clearly lose the election, and it would be very public what they had done. And so they conceded. And that's what actually happened then. And we're about to watch something like that happen now. But the Democrats and the press have set the stage for a lot of unrest when the lawful outcome is actually learned. We'll see what happens. And hopefully we'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Have a great day. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.